Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, there is a voice we are all going to miss. The great Kevin Cadle, who passed away this weekend. And we're going to talk about Kev at the start of our podcast here on Inside the Huddle. And thankfully, the strength in numbers, because I'm joined by Jeff Rimebold. I'm Neil Reynolds, joined by Jeff Rimebold. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy sports. And Jeff, it was just shocking news. I rang you about 4 o'clock in the morning, UK time, Monday morning. Just a man who's had such an impact on all of us who've worked in the sport and all of the fans who've followed this great sport.
Yeah, you know, it was really... I could tell when I answered the phone, Neil, I could tell something was wrong. And my first reaction was, gosh, well, I hope it's not your family or something. And then when you told me what happened, I just was dumbfounded, like in shock. I mean, it was so incredible because, you know, Kevin was always so full of life and such a wonderful person. You know, you mentioned about Kevin's voice as the intro to this show, and we've gotten some feedback. I know certainly I have, and I think you have too, feedback on Twitter. If people would like to see us keep that as the permanent intro to this show as a kind of to honor Kevin's memory. And you know, I think we ought to throw that open to the listeners.
I think it's a good one because you never quite know what to do for the best in these circumstances. So, you know, we'll let you guys tell us what you think about it, if it's appropriate for us to carry on using Kev's intro, or if we do it this time and then we kind of move on from that. Let's talk about the great man for a little while, Jeff, and then we'll get into making our picks, if it doesn't feel appropriate to dive straight into week 6 in the NFL. So let's talk about Kev. And I was just putting together some pictures for the NFL UK live event that we're going to have on Saturday, and there's pictures of you and him, there's me and him, there's Carl Bauman, his old producer, and him, Mike Carlson with Kev, Sean Gale with Kev, Sean and Kev on vacation in Spain. He was the one that kind of linked, he was the proper coach of the whole team. He was the kind of guy who linked us all. And as a coach, he always tried to get the best out of all of us.
Yeah, you know, and it was easy to see why he was so successful as a coach, because Kevin had a way of touching people. And I was thinking about this when I was coming in on the train, about how he was able to, in his own quiet way, always pull the best out of you. Mm. Always, you know, always reassure you that, you know, like, for example, I'll just tell you, when I started on this deal, it was really just this kind of a fill-in thing for somebody that couldn't get over here from the States, and I'm doing television. It's Nick and Kevin and I, and we're on it. And I've never done that kind of television before. Live TV is a whole different animal. And I was a little nervous, and you know, Kevin is cool. He was the coolest cat, man. In his cool sort of way, he just looked over at me. He goes, "You're gonna be all right, man. Don't worry about it." and he could just do that, but yet. Bring it out of you. And I watched him do it with guests. I watched him do it with you. I watched him do it with, like you say, Sean, Nick. I mean, everybody that he touched, he obviously had a concern for, and that was so genuine. And I can understand why his teams were so good.
Jeff, I said this on the little tribute I recorded yesterday.
I thought that was outstanding, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, I recorded that yesterday for Sky Sports and NFL UK, and yeah, people can go and find it on Twitter, and if they haven't seen it. But I talked to him. He did the same with me. My first show, December 2006, middle of the night, Falcons. I can't even remember who they were playing against. One of those Saturday night games. No one else wanted to work it. We used to do the studios then. And I felt like took me in straight away, helped me out, and stayed that way until the day passed away, really, because the week after our first show here, so the first time I'm the main presenter, first person who calls me the next morning was Kev. You know, I said when my mum passed away, one of the first people that called was Kev. Think how difficult it could have been and how other people might have been in TV when they decided to leave Kev doing the studio stuff around the London games and they put me hosting in the stadiums. And I'm driving to the stadium and the first person who calls me after that news break is Kev. Just like, well, you're going to be great. And that was just him. He was just class act all the way. And a coach and a mentor to all of us, I think.
Always. And like you say, this media thing may be as competitive and as backbiting and all the negative things that go along with it as professional football is. I work in both, so I have an appreciation for both. And that's exactly what you're saying is, you know, as Kev was moving away from his anchor role at Sky, he never lost his aloha for all of us that stayed behind and the show and where the direction was going and the game and the fans and all of it. And it was really like, man, do you remember last spring when we were in Wales and Kev came down? I think it was Wales.
I was going to bring that. I'm so glad we got to do them because you know how some people, you always say, well, I wish they knew they were that loved before they passed. But Kev did. I'm so glad we had those nights in Cardiff and Southampton because he was the star of the show.
Oh.
He stole the show. There were NFL players past and present there. He was the guy who got the standing ovation. And I thought about that on Monday morning. And I was just like, that just worked out. I mean, we didn't know what the future was going to hold. We just wanted Kev to be involved in those shows. But I'm so glad he had those couple of moments.
I think, you know, and it's really, I think you're really correct in that because I think Kev, as you know, it always stings when you know there's change. But as Kev kind of stepped back and took a look and really appreciated, I think Kevin understood just how much he was loved and how much the fans cared for him. I mean, think about this: 20 years.
Going into people's living room.
Because it's it's a little bit weird, really, because you're sitting in the studio and you're talking live to people that are in their homes.
Yeah.
And they may be there with their wife, they may be there with their kids, eating chips, whatever. Yeah. And you're having a conversation with them.
Mm-hmm.
And Kevin was able to connect, and I think this is why he was so well loved. He was able to connect to the fan through the television set, and that's extremely difficult to do.
It's very difficult to do. He did it all with a little bit of mischief in his eye and a glint in his eye, Jeff. Let's just have a little chat about some of his stories. I can remember we did a playoff game. He's always trying to make you laugh and get you in trouble. I remember a few interesting. We did a playoff game with Seattle and New Orleans, and Raphael Bush made a big hit for the Saints. And he cues up the replay and he just looks at me and goes, Neil, it's Big Bush time. And then the action replay starts and he's just staring at me, waiting. And I'm breaking up while trying to talk about it. We did remember the Philadelphia-Detroit game in the snow?
Yep.
And he's like, in cold weather like this, it's always good to have a Big Johnson. Talking about Calvin Johnson. And that was him. That was what he did. And the time when the ball game, he always said, let's get back to the ball game, wasn't it? And he got wind of these university students who would take a shot of drink every time he said ball game. And he said it about 10 or 11 times in an hour once, turned to me, winked, and said, those boys are going to be wasted. They're going to be wasted. But, I mean, that's just, I don't think anyone really has a story about Kev without laughing.
No, and you know what? There was that mischievous to him that was so... I remember him laughing at me when we went to New York to do the Super Bowl. Now, I am the absolute world's biggest sissy when it comes to cold weather.
I remember this Times Square.
And he stood up there and I'm freezing. Like, I can't even describe to you how cold I am. And I absolutely am miserable. I mean, like, I'm more miserable than miserable.
Yeah.
And my face is just about ready to fall off. And we're doing a hit.
So it was pre-recorded because it was the preview show. We'd been up the World Trade Center, the new one, did part one up there. We came back and did part two in Times Square. So we're chat. But to wrap everything up, Kev has to hit the closing link, as in saying, right, great, thanks for joining us here, blah, 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 the time we kick off for this. If he didn't wrap that bit up, we had to do the whole part again, right? And did he wrap it up in one go, Jeff?
No, absolutely not. And the beautiful thing was, the more I was shivering, the worse he would get. And he was doing it on purpose, right? And then as the he finally has pity on me and does it correctly, which he could have done seven takes before. But he turned to me and he just winked at me and he said, "How you like the weather?" And then walked away.
Kev was all right. He was from Buffalo. Yeah, I remember exactly. That. You had like literally frozen tears down your face. Do you remember?
He told me a story one time. This is really, I just, you have to have almost been to Texas to appreciate this, but I hope the fans have an appreciation for it. Kevin is from Buffalo, New York. He plays at Penn State. Now, Buffalo to Penn State is probably 3 hours, maybe, max, tops. You go from a major metropolitan city to a campus of 40,000 students, and then you go off and you're going to start your coaching career. And he ends up at a little San Angelo State in Texas. Now, if you ever saw the movie No Place for Old Men, it's that place. I mean, it's not nowhere, but it's about 10 and a half miles from nowhere.
Yeah.
And I mean, it is out in the middle of West Texas, and there is nothing around. I mean, you can see for a mile, right, down the road. And Kevin's out there, and he's an African-American guy in the middle of this, right? And he has to go recruiting, and they don't have a big budget at San Angelo State, so he's driving his car across the plains of West Texas, and there's deer running across the road. He's never even seen one before. And all of a sudden, and you have no way of knowing how fast you're going out there, because it's just like one straight road for hours. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, there's lights and a siren.
Oh, no.
And Kevin's in his state car, and his state recruiting car, and the cop pulls him over, and it's a typical Southern redneck cop. And there's Kevin alone, the African-American guy alone in his car. And he goes, you know, I he told me, and he got into that deep South Texas draw. And he said the guy told him, "Son, where are you going?" And Kevin goes, well, he gives him this whole story. He goes, "Son, you better turn that thing around.
Get out of Dodge."
He says, "Because it's fixing to be nighttime, and that ain't no time for you to be in West Texas."
Well, that was the thing, Jeff. Kevin, we were, you know, when you ever used to come over, we'd always go to lunch with Kevin. He always had a story, and so many of those. I remember sitting with him. So the very first Super Bowl show I worked on, I wasn't even doing full-time at Sky, but it was the Pittsburgh-Arizona Super Bowl. And so we went in on the Saturday to record a preview show again. So we're recording the link, the opening links again. And Kev couldn't hit the first link. He couldn't get started. And our old producer, Love, and him and Kev were so close. Yeah. You know, they'd go to battle and they'd butt heads. But Carl Bauman and Kev were so close. And Kev just couldn't hit this opening link, and Carl comes running in with a bottle of Listerine mouthwash. and he offers Kev some yeah, buddy, wash your mouth out, you'll be fine. Kev does, he obliges and does it, and he turned to me and went, "If I'd coached against that boy every week, I'd have been undefeated." But they did. They loved each other, and they were very, very close
friends.
Yeah,
you know what? I'm actually a little worried about Carl, because I've been trying to get a hold of him, you know, since I heard the news. And I know it transcended a working relationship with those two. I think Carl really, really looked at Kevin as a father figure in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And rightly so, because Carl was a young guy that got handed football probably because he had played and nobody else wanted it. And then Kev jumps in and, you know, I think Kevin provided a steadying hand for Carl as he drove the show forward. And you know, that's the thing that, you know, when I think about, I mean, you know, there's some guys that are cool because they work at it,
And then there's some cats that are just cool as a refrigerator, and it's just because that's who they are. And that was Kevin. I just have these images, you know, I get these mental images, Neil, of Kevin. And I can remember, you know, I used to love to be first at the studio and be sitting in there working, and you and I would be in there working, and in would walk Kev, and he would have, like, he would be dressed. I mean, impeccable.
It was like Johnny Cochran. Yeah, like come out of the courtroom. So sharp he'd cut himself.
Exactly. If the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit. I mean, he was like that.
But he came out, and he'd always have his office satchel.
Yeah.
And he had that long trench on, and he always was. I mean, everything was like
class. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, and he did it in a way that was just. It was just so natural. And that's the thing that, you know, he was kind of like, I kind of thought he was like the Barry White of, you know, punditry, right?
Yep.
Because he was just so, I mean, just so cool, so smooth. Stuff would be going on. Let me tell you something. If you think that you don't have to think on your feet and, you know, adapt and improvise and all that stuff. Yeah. When you're on live television and the bullets are flying, and you know what? The cat would never, especially on camera, would never get fazed.
Because I don't think it bothered him, Jeff. So he would be like, you know, and people know that Kev, sometimes it wasn't always perfect, but that was Kev, and that was part of the appeal, and because it didn't bother him. So, like, we were doing the Super Bowl in Indianapolis, and it was one before we started wearing the headsets, and this is probably why we wear the headsets now, but we were doing the Super Bowl and we were laughing. So I can't remember why we were laughing. I think Madonna was performing at halftime, and we were so I think we might have been taking the mickey out of Madonna. I don't remember what we were doing, but we were laughing and we were fairly distracted. And they came back in at the end of the halftime show. Kev starts chatting away and hadn't picked his microphone up. So he's chatting away. And I think he did it again in the third quarter, just like where he's so into the game and we were all just shooting the breeze. And we got back to the hotel, and again, bless him, Carl Bauman was sort of sat at one end of the bar, and he's got his head in his hands and he's having a drink. Me and Kev are at the other end of the bar. Kev's happy as Larry. He's like, look at that boy down there. He's got his head in his hands. He was just, life was too short for him to worry about stuff like that. And that was part of the appeal, and that's why. You know, you put stuff on Twitter yesterday and, you know, normally you get like 10, 20 likes. You know, the stuff I put on about Kev yesterday was liked by more than 10,000 people, and it just shows
you. That's an indication right there.
Yeah, and he was just an incredible, incredible man. I had one other thing I was just going to tell. All these stories of Kev just keep coming to me. I'll try and think of it in a second.
You know what? The other thing I think, I don't know if people realize about Kevin, I think it's important that those of us who knew him really well, you know, there was never a time when I was over here, he had Christmas, that he didn't invite me, my son, whoever was over here, to his house.
Yep. I've never had a Christmas morning where I didn't, and I'll miss that.
He always talked about breaking bread. That was his thing. Let's break bread.
I'll miss having his text message every Christmas morning and every New Year's Eve.
Yep.
And that was just him. You never, ever. I was in Florida this year on vacation. Kev rings me up. You know, that's just, he was always reaching out to people.
You know, and how much he loved his children and his wife. I remember he took his wife to the New York
Super Bowl. Yeah, she came out. Yeah,
and just it was so cool to watch them together.
Yeah,
and you know, Kev always found a way to get home to Arizona to see his mom.
Yeah,
all the stuff that all the stuff that matters, he did.
Let me tell you the story I remembered, Jeff. So we sometimes sit around the studio. You know, we'll be talking to you, Jeff. What was Jerry Glanville like? You know, and what? And then we'll be Sean. What was Buddy Ryan like to play? Not when we're recording, but when we're just watching the game. And you'd be like to me sometimes, you went around Montana's house, you know, what was Montana like? And you kind of, it's not necessarily sort of deliberate name dropping, but it's all kind of mentioning people you've been. And then one day, just really casually, and you were in the studio, I'm sure, Kev was like, Stevie Wonder was around the house for dinner. Do you remember?
I remember. I said, what?
Stevie Wonder.
We're not talking about Stevie Smith. We're talking about the Stevie Wonder.
Stevie came around the crib, yeah. All right. There you go then. You win.
You Trump. Yeah. Fold your cards, boys. It's over.
You win.
Yeah, I tell you what. He's just such a wonderful, sweet, kind, giving, all the right words you want somebody to say about you, and he will certainly be missed by all of us.
He will be missed by all of us. That's the great Kevin Cadle, and gone too soon at 62. We loved him. We'll miss him. We were coached by him right to the very, very end, and we were inspired by him from, I think, the moment we met him. He would tell us, as he often told me, I would often see Kev at fan events. You know, I'd be out doing Trafalgar Square, or I'd be doing Regent Street, and I'd come off stage and I'd see Kev briefly. I'd be like, Kev, I'll come and see you in a minute. I need to just do this on stage. And he would say, go do your thing. Yeah. So he would want us to
always
go and do our thing.
Yeah, you know, and I remember it, you know, I said, because, you know, we spend so much time together. I mean, the viewers see the 3 hours or 4 hours on television, but those are long days with a lot of, you actually spend an awful lot of time together, get to know each other a great deal. And I was fascinated with Kevin's growing up in Buffalo and how he ended up at Penn State. And he told me about...
He used to say Buffalo is a great place to be from.
Yeah, you know...
Not a great place to live. He was always like, it's great to be from Buffalo.
But, you know, he told me a story about being a ball boy for, at that time, there was an NBA franchise in Buffalo called the Buffalo Braves. And they were decent a couple times, but Kevin was, as a little boy, like a 12-year-old kid, was a ball boy. And so he sat underneath the basket, and, you know, if there was perspiration on the floor during a timeout, he'd wipe it up, and you'd get the ball if it went out of bounds, all that kind of stuff. And it was, it was so much fun to hear him talk about Bob McAdoo and Artis Gilmore and all of the players of that era and how they motivated him and gave him a target to shoot for as a young student athlete. And then now thinking about Kev, how much Kev has influenced young kids just like that.
He'll have a big he'll be a big reason why that stadium's packed out again this weekend.
I agree with you. And I thought the other thing too, I don't know how it can happen, but I really thought your idea of, and I saw this on Twitter, Neil, and we haven't even talked about it yet, but your idea about creating some sort of trophy or...
Yeah, that came from, I think it was Paul Ridley sent that on Twitter. I saw that and straight away retweeted it. And then somebody else said they could give it, it'd be the Kevin Cadle Mum Man of the Match Award. If you know Kev, if you ever got
my to...
My man. That's how he was every time. Everyone was his man.
I had to be just floating by my man.
Oh, he's going to be missed. Let's... we could sit here and do an hour of Kev stories. He would probably be telling us to move on.
Yeah, you'd say, do your thing.
Do your thing. That's enough. Let's talk a little bit of week six, then we'll make our picks for week seven then, Jeff. Let's start with the Packers. Packers obviously losing to the Vikings, but the big news is Aaron Rodgers. Is it, and I know as a coach you'd be like, we can't be defined that way, but is this a season buster?
Well, you know what? I've watched really, really closely the messaging that's coming out of Green Bay, particularly coming out of Mike McCarthy. And I got to tell you, it's going to be really difficult for them now. Not just because they lost maybe the best quarterback in football, but they lost a guy that meant so much to them, the spirit of that football team, the heart of that football team. You know, you heard Devontae Adams say it. You heard all the players, all the guys say it. And just so much pressure now goes to Hundley's shoulders, a guy that's not ready to play.
Right.
And, you know, just being frank and honest, he's not ready to be a starter in the National Football League, particularly in that offense that is so quarterback and pass reliant. This is, again, an illustration of, you know, going back to what we always talk about. You cannot be a one-dimensional football team,
right?
Because this is one of the risks of it, is you lose a great player. And if you don't have the ability to run the football, and, you know, can Ty Montgomery take 25 carries a game?
Still nursing those sore ribs, isn't he? Broke his ribs and
stuff. Yeah, so I think the Packers are in real trouble. But, I on the other hand, for every adversity comes opportunity. And now if you're Minnesota or you're Detroit, you're ready to pounce. You've got to now think, this is our year. And it really changes, Neil, in my opinion. This one injury changes the entire complexion of the NFC race.
Yeah, which is wide open, right?
Absolutely wide open. And now, same thing, if you're Carolina, for example, you're looking at this as, hey, what a great opportunity.
Philadelphia.
For us. Exactly.
Philadelphia at 5-1. So there was a couple of big comebacks, Jeff. So the Patriots came back from 14 points down to beat the Jets, but I did not see this one coming. On the road, Miami are down 17-0 at halftime to the Atlanta Falcons. It was an offense that hadn't got going all season long. That's the polite way to put it. They'd scored 3 offensive touchdowns coming into the game. And the Dolphins win it. And suddenly the Dolphins are 3-2.
Well, let me just say this. One of our Dolphin fans hit me on Twitter at halftime and was just in the jar about the offensive performance of the Dolphins. I said, hang in there, it'll get better. I didn't think it would get 20.
Couldn't get worse.
I didn't think it would get them over the hump. But let's look at why that happened. And I think the lesson is there for not only the Dolphins and, you know, their football team. I think the lesson is there for a number of football teams in the NFL, and we'll talk about the Giants in a second. And here I'm on a rant today, but I'm going to tell you something, fellas. Their best football player, lines up at tailback. And you've got to get that kid the ball.
Yep.
They came over here, and I will never understand this one in a million years, and I'd love to sit and talk to Adam Gase about it. When you know that Jay Ajayi is at home and has a chance to show out for his people.
First and goal at the 4.
And you don't put the ball in his hands, you got to be asking that question. Now, I think what happened to him, to be honest with you, in Atlanta, is they were, I watched the tape. Cutler was unsettled. Mm-hmm. They just looked out of sync, just like they've been all year. So what was the answer? Just give it to Jay. And then Jay does what Jay does, which is be the Jay train, and he's knocking guys over, and he's grinding out yards and blood. You know, he's getting every bloody yard he can get.
Yeah.
And I don't say a bloody yard like an English guy would say.
Bloody great.
Like there's blood on the ball when he gets up off. I mean, he is a nasty, angry runner.
Yeah.
And what that did was excited his football team, because the next series, I think it is, Jarvis Landry catches a ball about a yard and a half short of a first down on third down, and he's just busting DBs to get the first down. And that gave him some emotional lift, and that's what great running backs will do. Fitz in Arizona.
Fitzgerald, Larry Fitzgerald.
Yeah, Fitz said he would have had a Super Bowl ring a lot sooner had Adrian Peterson come sooner. Now, that's tall praise after 28 carries or 27 carries or whatever he had. But that's what those kinds of guys do for your football team. Fournette's doing it in Jacksonville.
Let's talk about the Falcons, because it's an obvious situation to talk about with them. They blew a big lead. They blew a big lead at halftime. Coming up next for them is the New England Patriots. So this reminder comes as they're about to be served the reminder of last year's Super Bowl when they led 28-3 late in that game. All we know about that one. Jeff, I wonder with the Falcons, if I go and drink myself stupid, the next day I'm going to have a hangover. I can't just say I'm not going to have a hangover. I have to work through that hangover. I have to do whatever I can to get rid of that hangover. It's not just words. It was words in the off-season. But here they are, last two games, they've turned the ball over 4 times, and it doesn't look like it's quite Right. So is there a Super Bowl hangover? Is that comeback thing?
Well, I think you look at historically, yes, there is. Mm. And you know, I mean, especially when you lose one that you are supposed to win.
Yeah.
Let's go back to New Orleans and last second field goal by Adam Vinatieri to beat a 14-2, I believe it was, Rams team.
Yeah.
I mean, just
14-point
favorites. Yeah. I think they were 14-2 on the year.
Yeah.
Marshall Faulk, the greatest.
Yeah.
It's like nobody gave the Patriots a chance. Mm-hmm. And it was so shocking that they came out the next year, and I think they lost four of the first six.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there is, it's a fact. It is a documented fact. If you lose, particularly one you're supposed to win, I mean, look at the Seahawks, right? Look at the Seahawks. They are one Marshawn Lynch run away from
having it. Yeah.
Two of them in a row.
Yeah.
And what happened the next year?
Yeah. Oh, do you think the fact that the lead and they blew the lead and then you start to blow another lead, can there be a mental thing?
Yeah, it, because it's that little voice that you know, we all have that little demon on our shoulder, mm-hmm. and when here we go again. Oh boy. Oh gosh. And then, you know, instead of just being free and cutting it loose and playing through it. But, you know, it's that white elephant in the room. Mm. Everybody knows it's there.
Yep.
And until you have won enough of them, it's going to always hang around on you. And again, what's the best way to exercise it? I mean, you can go to all the sports psychologists in the world and all those, but the bottom line is you got to close out games. Mm-hmm. And, you know, once you've closed out enough games, I think the hangover will be over. But it's like you said, I mean, you can get up and you can take aspirin and you can do whatever it is, but it ain't going to get over till it's over.
Coaching is always valuable in all sports. So we talked about that at the start with Kev. But there's a school of thought that players win games, Jeff. That's sometimes what's leveled at people who try and raise up coaches. But, boy, are they missing Kyle Shanahan, the offensive coordinator from a year ago.
Well, yeah,
that's one of their biggest offensive weapons by the looks of it.
Yeah, you think coaches don't matter. Let me ask you about the Los Angeles Rams.
Yeah.
I mean, you think coaches matter. I mean, you look around the National Football League, it does matter. Mm. It matters in a big way. Now, where it's different, I think, is the higher the level of football that you go to, the less you get, quote, out-schemed by another coach.
Right.
Right? If you're not going to out-coach somebody in the NFL. You may be able to prepare your team better. You may be able to motivate your team better. You may be able to manage the personalities on your team better. There are very few teams in the National Football League that do things that are unsound.
Right.
Right. So I think it comes down to those factors. And, you know, the Giants are just going through this whole deal.
Mm.
You know, they're 0-5. And
well, they were.
McAdoo says, well, I'm just saying.
At
the point they're 0-5. McAdoo says, this shocks me. I mean, I hear this comment and I go, man, did you just say that? And you're coaching in the National Football League? He said, I just felt about the decision to give up play calling to Sullivan. He said, I just felt that the entire team needed me this week. And I went, huh? And it was like one of those, and they didn't need you for the last 10 weeks that you've been a football team? I mean, I know what he was trying to say.
Yeah.
Right? That he had to take his focus more off of, because again, you could see it. That's why it's so difficult to do that, to manage the game, to control the sideline, to feel the energy of the game, to work with the officials, know the situations, all those, and then call plays too.
Right.
So, but what did you see, Giants fans, out of that game was Orleans Darkwa, right? Not your household name out of Tulane. And he's a good football player because we played against him when I was at SMU and he was at Tulane. He's a good football player. They gave the ball to the running back and they said, run the ball.
Oh, it sets up everything, right?
Absolutely. Everything. And
you know, we get in coaching, and I'm going to tell you something. I'm as guilty of it as anybody else. I'm not pointing fingers. I'm pointing finger here first. We get so caught up sometimes in what we do and what we are and, you know, our system and all that other stuff. You can get away from what's good for your football team. And I think another guy that's kind of started to figure that out a little bit sometimes, I see Sean Payton go the other way sometimes too.
Right.
Where it's just all throw.
Yeah,
huge numbers. I care about what Breeze's numbers are. And let me tell you a story about, I won't use what coach it was, but it was in the NFC North. And on the, you know, there's cork boards, you know, for, you know, stuff that you got to hang up for the league and all that other stuff, right? But, you know, this offensive coordinator would keep his offensive stats on that board and would highlight them every week. And it was a team that was doing extremely well offensively but struggling on defense.
Right.
So what you're doing when you do that is what?
I'm all right. My bit's okay.
Yeah.
The rest of it's not.
Yeah, when's the defense going to
do? Yeah, it's the other side of the ball.
Did you see where...
see, we did it.
We're third in the NFC.
It's
and,
not me.
Yeah.
Fire the other guy.
Yeah. That's what happens sometimes. Yeah. And the good teams don't allow that to creep in. I watched the Patriots sideline very, very, very closely in that game. Mm. And they still have some problems now.
Yep.
Let me tell you something. That is so unpatriot-like. To give up the kind of plays they did in the fourth quarter, you know, when they're trying to protect a 10-point lead.
Yeah, yeah. Brady's getting hit a lot as well.
Oh, and well, you know what? Give Todd Bowles and those guys credits with the Jets. And here we go, Jets fans. I hope you're listening now. I thought their approach to Brady was outstanding.
Right.
Because they didn't say, well, we're going to just make him throw it underneath and we're going to, you know, they challenged him. Their idea was to hit him, they pressured him about. It looked to me, I didn't have the stats, but I would guess they were 60% pressure in the game. You know, Gronk made a couple plays on them. But all in all, they played well enough to win on defense. And then, you know, offensively, you know, they got Jermaine Kearse right now. And you know, that's the kid out of TCU, it slips my mind right now, that scored the touchdown in the game. It was a punt return. Curley.
Jeremy Curley.
I mean, that's what they got right now. And
we were critical of them, Jeff, though, for casting aside Nick Mangold, Darrell Revis, David Harris, Eric Decker, Brandon Marshall. Show me one of those guys who's done anything. Some of them aren't even in the league at the moment. So maybe we should have actually been saying, well, they've cleared a lot of salary cap room for players that weren't contributing.
Well,
they were names, not necessarily.
I think one of the hardest things for fans and for the media to understand is when it's time to move on from
when the name doesn't match the player anymore.
Right, when the production doesn't match the salary.
Yeah.
And that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah,
it's the salary, when the production doesn't match the salary. The guy who's been the best at that over time has been Belichick.
Yeah.
Now, I would say they may have gotten a little too aggressive moving guys that could still help them. You know,
Belichick.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think on you could defense. Use Chandler Jones and Jamie Collins.
Absolutely. Those two guys would have changed the dynamic of that defense right now. Because here's what I see. When you're asking Kyle Van Noy, who's an inside linebacker, to go to the edge and be an edge pass rusher for you, and Dietrich Wise, who's a rookie, and... You know, you're taking Hightower and putting him on the edge. Where's your defensive ends?
Yeah.
You know, and I know there are multiple, you know, 4-3-3-4 mix and all that stuff, and the more you can do and all. But I'm just telling you, they did not rush the passer very well. And then did, like I say, unpatriot-like things. Remember when we were in Super Bowl? Seattle, all right? Now, everybody in the National Football League knows that McCown does, one of the things McCown does have the ability to do is get outside the pocket and extend plays. He's a good athlete for a guy his size. And he can make plays outside the pocket. When you and I were at the Patriot practices and press conference for that, what did they talk about? The whole thing was about keep Russell inside.
Yep.
Keep him inside. Especially late in the game
where when a quarterback gets out of the pocket, it puts incredible stress on the back end. And they let McCown out of the pocket two or three times in the fourth quarter, and he damn near won that thing.
Yeah, it was an amazing week for games and stories across the league. Adrian Peterson had his first 100-yard rushing day since December 2015 in his debut for the Cardinals. They beat Tampa Bay 38-33. Yeah, the Steelers, Jeff. Jeff's pointing at my notes as I look at the Steelers. 19, the Chiefs. 13. Le'Veon Bell wanted the ball. He only had 15 carries the week before. He had 32, 179 yards, and a touchdown. But it's sort of Steelers' defense that showed up as well, Jeff. What caught your eye in this one?
Well, I think the fact, number one, that the Steelers' defense did. Mm. And interesting, isn't it? Who got the sack at the end of the game to preserve the win?
James Harrison. He's barely been 7 snaps on defense coming into that game. Yep. He's barely played. Yep. They activated him, I think, because I saw some comments where they were saying, well, he played really well against the Chiefs in the playoffs last year. But yeah, 39 years old, off the edge.
I think that we had talked about this, and I think it was, we discussed it even on Twitter, about Ben's comments about, I may not have it anymore. Mm. I really, truly believe, and I broached this idea at the time, that was more of a ploy to put it on him
and take the pressure off of
his teammates. And, you know, somebody hit me on Twitter before the game and said, do you think Big Ben's washed up? I said, I never bet against great competitors, right? And he played well. But there's trouble in Pittsburgh. And let me just say, you have this huge win. Right, a huge win that you really needed, puts you on top of your division, and all of a sudden the talk's about what? Martavius Bryant wants to get traded. I mean,
unless they're taking turns, Jeff. One minute it was, you know, it was Antonio Brown throwing over the gay trade ball. Then Le'Veon Bell comes out with public quotes saying that he's not getting enough carries. Jesse James says, it was a game plan problem against Jacksonville. Mike Tomlin comes out and says it was a pick six problem, not a game plan problem. Then Big Ben's, this is not the Steelers.
That's not the thing.
Why is that then? Is Tomlin giving them too much loose rein? I mean, it has been the Steelers a little bit in the back end of last year as well, because you had the Facebook Live thing in the locker room with Antonio Brown. I wonder if it's just you have too many superstars on a team.
That can happen because they all come with their own egos and they're big egos. That's why they're great players.
Yeah,
and you know they all come with their own agendas, and everybody in their posse is telling them you're not getting the ball enough, and you know they're screwing you in the game plan and all of that stuff. So it's very easy to happen, and that's why I say, coaching matters. Coaching is more than being able to diagram, you know, the delay route or the, you know, counter tray or the 3-4 defense or, you know, double A-gap pressure. I mean, the coaching is the whole deal.
Go on.
And I just think that's as we get grinding now into the middle of the season and headed to the playoffs, that's where great coaching is going to come to the fore.
Let's move ahead and make our picks for Week 7. And it's going to be a good one. We're back on the sidelines. Not at Wembley this week. We'll be at Twickenham. So, first of all, we'll be together at NFL UK Live on Saturday. It's at the Mermaid Theatre, 1 till 4. There'll be visits from both teams. So both teams will be sending down players, the Rams and the Cardinals. And then we've got some legends who will be on stage as well. Eric Dickerson and Torrey Holt.
Dick's going to be here?
Yeah, Eric Dickerson.
Torrey
Holt from the Rams. And then we've got Aeneas Williams and Adrian Wilson. A couple of hard-hitting defensive backs.
I'm going to tell you something. You know what? That Aeneas Williams might have been, at his time, the best corner in the National Football League. But because he played on very average teams, he was out in Arizona, nobody really appreciates the greatness of Aeneas Williams.
So we've got those guys coming along. You can still grab your tickets if you want to come along to this event. So go to NFLUK.com to check that out. You can go to Ticketmaster and you'll see the ticket for NFL UK Live. Some legends will be there. And we'll have a nice... Sean Gale's going to come along. Dallas Clark is going to be with us. So we'll have a chat about some of Kevin Cadle's finer moments there as well, I'm sure. And then we are going to be... at Twickenham, Jeff, and quite rightly, it's nice that the NFL UK are going to honor Kevin at that game with something in the stadium, which I feel is right.
Yeah, and I think it's a class thing by NFL UK to do it, and I think it's an opportunity for all the fans, certainly in the stadium and the fans that are watching on TV, to be a part of saying, you know, Kevin, we love you, and aloha.
I was chatting with Alistair Kirkwood, the managing director of NFL UK, yesterday, and we both said, feels like Kev's a minute's round of applause, not a minute's silence kind of guy. So I think we'll see Twickenham rise as one at some point for our friend, which will be...
That'll be awesome.
That'll be pretty cool.
Yeah.
It will be pretty cool. Let's make our picks then for week 7 in the NFL. We'll start on Thursday night.
By the way, how are we doing? I just want to ask a question. Just ask. We got a running total going or anything? I just want to know. I'm just asking.
Running total on?
Yeah, who's one? You and me?
Oh, I don't know. Probably me. I don't know. Hey, they're all in my notebook. Yeah. I'll make sure
you're the
I'm
commissioner.
Winning. I'll make sure I'm winning. I don't think either of us are covering ourselves in glory.
No, I know. I tell you what. Last week, I'm going to tell you something. If you've ever been to Las Vegas, the reason that those hotels are so tall and those pools are so big are weekends like last week.
Because if you tell me you put a lot of money on the New York Giants.
No, God.
When their own head coach said, no one's giving us a chance in hell.
No. And
then I'm not having that.
Or in heaven either.
I'm not having that. No one was backing the Giants last week. I kept telling people on Sky, stick with us. But I was so wanted to just say, just go, this is your night. This is your time to get an early
this
night.
Is your
Make sure you join us next Sunday night for New England Atlanta. But cash your chips in now and go to bed.
Oh, God.
So Thursday kicks off week 7, and suddenly it's panic time for the Oakland Raiders. They've lost 4 in a row, Jeff, after a 2-0 start. They're at home against the Chiefs.
Not a good place to be.
No.
First of all, this is a hated rivalry. I mean, this is a blood rivalry.
Yep.
This is as intense as any rivalry in the National Football League. Everybody talks about Bears-Packers, you know, Cowboys-Eagles, you know, all that. And those are all great rivalries. Ravens-Steelers. But let me tell you something. They hate each other.
Mm-hmm.
The organizations don't like each other. The towns don't like each other. The players don't like each other. And right now, if you're the Raiders, and you're the real Raiders, and you're not some phony baloney bunch wearing silver and black, you're going to come out and you are going to play physical football in the college.
Are they going to play the same desperate football that the Giants almost play? Because desperate teams are dangerous teams.
Desperate people do desperate things. And I'm going to tell you something. It's reached that point.
Mm-hmm.
Or Kansas City's going to run away with that thing. Denver got beat last week, you know, again. So I'm going to take Kansas City because I think they'll bounce back.
Yep.
I think they got their nose bloodied a little bit,
and
that'll be good for them.
Yeah, I'm going Kansas City as well, but I'm with you. I think Raiders will be dangerous and desperate. Let's move on to Sunday, Carolina at Chicago. They used to say John Fox was a very conservative coach. Who stole John Fox? We've had... the reverse at the goal line with the flip to Mitchell Trubisky, a fake punt. Now we had Tarik Cohen throwing a touchdown.
Longest pass of the year thrown by a running back.
Yeah.
That's the Chicago Bears offense.
Do you know, Georgie told me yesterday, my son George, I came home from work. He said, Dad, he said, do you know that touchdown was the first touchdown, it must have been on Twitter or somewhere, the first touchdown thrown by a man under 5'9" since Wee Willie Smith. And I said, George, I think you might have been led up the garden path. I've never heard of Wee Willie Smith. But if that's true, stat bomb. Hey.
George, I'm going to tell you the truth. Doug Flutie, 5'8".
There you go, see? That's what I thought. Right, Flutie was 5'8". Who the hell's Wee Willie Smith as well?
Flutie would never let him list him as... I think he was always listed like 5'11".
Right. Hey, I just appreciated the statistical geekiness of my son. I'm glad it's rubbing off.
My boy.
Yeah, exactly. Carolina or Chicago? I'm going Carolina to win on the road.
Carolina.
All right, both going Carolina. Tennessee at Cleveland. Oh, they were supposed to be better than this. I really think Hugh Jackson might be very soon getting fired and take Sashi Brown and take Paul DePodesta with him. I mean, this whole thing is they can't now because they're too far in, right?
They're too far in.
But it was highlighted, and I asked Peter King this on our show on Sunday. I said, am I being unfair? Because I know fans will be watching Deshaun Watson throw three touchdowns, mm-hmm. wondering why can't we have him. They'll see Carson Wentz at 5-1, wondering why didn't we have him. Those are obvious questions, and now we've got Kevin Hogan, who's the 28th starting quarterback since 1999.
You know what? I'm just going to... You're a statistical guy, so I'm going to give you a statistic. Mm-hmm. Greatness is often reflected in consistency at the most important position on the field, which is quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Since Don Majkowski got hurt in 1992... All right, Neil, how many seasons is that?
I don't know, I'm very good at maths. 25?
In all of those, in 25 seasons and all those playoff games and Super Bowl and all of it, there have been only 9 times that either Brett Favre or Aaron Rodgers did not quarterback the Green Bay Packers.
Wow.
Since 1992, 2 guys.
Wow.
And what was the statistic you just laid on me about the Browns?
So since they re-entered the NFL in 1998, they've started 28 different quarterbacks.
Enough said. There is proof of where you're at.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, there's a lot. I don't like to get into that finger-pointing thing.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a Browns fan at some point, or you're Mr. Haslam, you got to say, what are we doing?
Well, yeah, you might, but you're right. This is where they are. Fascinating study, the Browns, because they decided to go all in with this kind of analytical approach. But at some point, if I'm Jimmy Haslam, I walk into their room, their meeting room, and I say, I don't really care what the formula says or what the computer says or what the spreadsheet says. I quite like the look of that Carson Wentz, and we could have had him. I quite like this Deshaun Watson kid. And I understand there's an argument as well, Jeff, and this is the argument that people always come back with immediately is, well, if they had Dak Prescott, he wouldn't have been the same quarterback in Cleveland as he was in Dallas. Mm-hmm. I get that. Or Carson Wentz wouldn't be the same in Cleveland as he is in Philadelphia. But if you look at Carson Wentz in college or Deshaun Watson in college and you compare them to Deshaun Kizer, they were both better than Deshaun Kizer and better than Kevin Hogan. So surely they would have been better in Cleveland.
Yeah, and the thing that's interesting to me about the Browns is, you know, where are they good, right? There's one place that I would say right now that they're good enough to win at, and that's the offensive line,
mm-hmm.
right? So if you've got an offensive line that's pretty damn good, what do?
Run the football. You go back to running the football.
The football.
Yeah.
Now, John Fox has almost the exact same situation in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
The Bears' offensive line ain't bad. Mm-hmm. They're not bad. They can run the ball.
Yep. I mean,
they can block,
yep.
right? They got a young quarterback. They've found themselves some backs. They're not very good at receiver. And so what are they doing?
Mm-hmm.
They're winning a couple of games.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, what have the Bears won? 3?
I think they won 2 now.
Right, so they've won 2.
Won 2 and
they would let school out for a week in Cleveland if the Browns won 2 games.
That'd be fun. Well, I'm going to take Tennessee then. I'm assuming we're not taking the Browns.
Yeah, because Mariota's back. Even though he's on one leg, you can see the influence.
All right, let's whiz through a couple of these other ones. New Orleans at Green Bay. So Brett Hundley is going to be the... Yeah, I'm going New Orleans as well. It's just too devastating a loss with Aaron Rodgers. Out. New York Jets at Miami. So the Jets controlled this one last time, but I think Miami have got a formula that can work, and they're at home. They've got to ride Jay Ajayi. That's going to be tough against that defense, but I'm going to pick Miami to kind of level it up against the Jets this season. What do you think?
I'm going to take the Jets.
All right. You think they're going to bully them still?
More physical team.
Yeah. So here we are then. Our game in London, the Arizona Cardinals against the Los Angeles Rams. So when Todd Gurley came out, of college, Todd Gurley drew some early comparisons as a rookie to Adrian Peterson. Todd Gurley this week tweeted, "That's what happens when you write off the GOAT." He is in awe of Adrian Peterson. We're going to now see both of them on the field as very in-form running backs. This is going to be a real treat.
Yeah, and you know, again, just a little inside for the listeners. These guys may be making millions of dollars. And these guys might have been drafted in the first round and all that stuff. But you know what? These guys are still kids in a lot of ways. And I'm going to tell you something.
Todd Gurley's going to be standing on that sideline. He's going to look across. And he's going to see 28 on the other side.
Yeah.
He's going to have one of those, as we say in Hawaii, chicken skin moments where all of a sudden you just realize, that's my hero.
Yeah.
And I think that's really cool.
Who are you going for, Jeff? This is a tough one to call now because I was a bit worried about Arizona, but they looked good last week.
I'm gonna buy the Kool-Aid that they are serving out there with a little bit of ice, a nice umbrella in the drink. I'm going the Rams.
All right, both going Rams in that one. Tampa Bay at Buffalo. All right, of all weeks, this week of all weeks, I'm going to pick the Buffalo.
I got to go. That is my call. I'm glad you said that because I thought about that coming in.
I'm picking the Bills. I'm rooting for the Bills.
And I think everybody listening, we have a emotional responsibility.
To cheer for Buffalo.
To cheer for Buffalo. One time.
I still felt a bit weird when I said I'm rooting for the Bills.
As Lou Saban said in the NFL feature, when he was head coach of the Bills, he goes, "One time, baby, one time."
I always remember being in the studio when Buffalo would beat up on Miami, and Kev would always go, "We own the Dolphins. We don't just beat the Dolphins.
Kevin was a little bit convenient with his fandom, with the
bit like me, right?
With the Dolphins, because he could turn on them.
People used to say, "Oh, it's the Bills against the Dolphins this week." And Carl Bauman, again, our producer, would say, like, "Let's make a big thing of it. You know, it's Neil against Kev. It's Buffalo against Miami." And me and Kev would both look at each other and go, "Just want a good game, really. Don't really mind." And then when the cameras would come on, be like, "We're going to beat you." And he'd be like, "My team owns you." And that was just it. That's sort of just going back to the man we talked about. If you offered Kev the chance to watch Buffalo win an ugly game that was boring to watch for 3 hours, or lose a game that was great to watch for 3 hours, he'd pick them losing because he wants people to watch a good game.
Good football.
That was what he was.
Yep.
Right, we're both taking Buffalo. Let's rattle through a couple of these. Baltimore at Minnesota. I'm going Minnesota to win at home. Both going Minnesota. Jacksonville at Indianapolis. So Jacksonville, it's their good week this week, isn't it? They win what they win and lose, so they'll win this week.
Just turn around and give it.
My goodness. How quick is he? I mean, it's like 22 miles an hour on the 90-yard touchdown a couple of weeks ago. 21 miles an hour. This is a power back.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big man. Remember when we were at the Super Bowl last year and we had a chance to talk to him?
I told that story to someone the other day. I said about Jeff interviewing Leonard Fournette, and he looks a little bit like the guy I thought you were talking to. I saw you from a distance. I was like, Jeff's chatting to Justin Houston from the Chiefs. And then you're like, "Come over here, come meet Leonard Fournette." I was like, "What? That's not a running back."
That is a big man. You imagine if you're like a 190-pound defensive back and you're getting paid to cover guys. It's like, no mas.
Ugh. But what about the clip where he's calling Mike Mitchell on to, he's waving him on to hit him a couple of weeks.
Come on, bring it, because Mitchell's supposed to be a hitter. Right?
Yeah. What about that hit, the Mitchell one, actually, then just on into the back of Alex Smith? I mean, we gave him at first in the studio. We gave him the bit of the benefit of the doubt because we only got one quick look at it before they came in. And Corey Wooten, who was with us, said maybe he got blocked into him a little bit. I watched it now since then. I had a bit more time to look at it. He targets the back of Alex Smith's legs. That's nasty.
Yeah, and again, I think that's the unwritten code is you don't go after a guy's legs. Interestingly enough, somebody tackled Gronk that way in the game.
Okay.
Gronk caught a ball and started to turn up field, and the DB sliced him. Mm. And you could see him turn and give the guy the, "Hey, brother, what's going on here?" Stare.
Let's move on. I'm going to. Did I have to bleep that out then? Did you make
it? I said stare.
Oh, okay, good.
Stare.
The stare. Because I'm not bloody bleeping anything out. Cincinnati.
I got kids to feed me.
Yeah, exactly. Cincinnati at Pittsburgh. I'm going to serve up an upset special for you here, Jeffrey. On the road, the Cincinnati Bengals are going
to
win.
Well, I'm sending it back because Pittsburgh ain't losing to Cincinnati. Nope.
Fair enough. This is how I fall behind in the standard. Dallas at San Francisco. 49ers have lost. I think their last five have all been by one score. They're right there. They're close.
I think it's the first time, I think, in the history of the NFL, a team has been that close that many times.
As of right now, no Zeke as well, until we hear differently with the whole legal situation.
So. Yeah, and as you get later in the week now, I mean, you got to start thinking, this is Tuesday, and there are only so many work days. And, you know, obviously, you know, he knows the playbook, yada, yada, yada. But I don't think this is the week San Francisco is going to break through, but they are getting closer. It's poor Kyle Shanahan, 0-6. He's got to be shaking his head, but they're going to be all right.
You're going to Dallas, yeah?
Yes, sir.
I'm going to San Francisco. There's back-to-back upset special. C.J. Beathard is going to deliver
the
goods
at
quarterback.
Where did you go for lunch?
I think that's probably because I didn't have any yet. I felt really old in the studio on Sunday night because C.J. Beathard got into the game for the 49ers, and we were doing the link, and I said on this, C.J. Beathard in the game for the 49ers. For those of you older fans, he's the grandson of Bobby Beathard, the guy who built the Washington Redskins Super Bowl teams. And we went back to the game, and then all the guys in the gallery back said, like, who? What? Who's Bobby Beathard? And I was like, oh,
wow. You know what? That's interesting, because Bobby Beathard was also, you know, everybody's got him. Everybody got a skeleton in their closet. And Bobby Beathard was also the guy that drafted Ryan Leaf, not Peyton Manning.
Wow, he did, didn't he? Yep. Yeah, he had that choice. Let's move on to, so we've done Dallas at San Francisco. Denver at the Chargers. I'm picking the Denver Broncos to bounce back here, Jeff, in L.A. Who do you like, Broncos or Chargers?
Ooh, boy. You know, Denver's the better football team. Emmanuel's going to be out, I think. Mm-hmm. That's what I heard. And that's going to hurt them. Simeon's banged up. I'm going to say Chargers. I'm going to go Chargers at home. Okay. I think they got a little momentum right now, winning two games, and you know, a little belief starting to happen.
I've just picked four road teams in a row here. I've just realized that. Well, make this five road teams in a row, Jeff, because Seattle at the New York Giants, I'm going Seahawks.
Ooh, boy.
Tricky one,
West
this one.
To East,
West to East.
Hard.
Giants are on a roll. If this was the other way around and the Giants were going out to Seattle, I wouldn't give them a... I'd be like Ben McAdoo. No one's given us a chance in hell. But Giants could make a game of this. I'll give you that.
I would say this, that I'm going to take Seattle based upon the fact that the wrinkles that the Giants had for Denver, some of the formations, some of the tight end stuff, some of the Evan Ingram stuff, now that's on tape. And that'll give Pete and his coaches a chance to prepare for it. And I'm going to take Seattle because of that. And they've got a better D-line than Denver.
All right, here we go with number six for road teams picked in a row.
Are you kidding me?
I'm going for the Atlanta Falcons at the New England Patriots in Foxborough. It's a hat trick of heavy defeats at home for the New England Patriots. I've been drinking. I don't know.
You're saying that the Patriots are going to lose another one at home?
Yeah. They almost lost.
Do you know something? Is Brady hurt or... Giselle not happy with them?
I don't know, but I feel like, you know, do you know what it is, Jeff? I've realized this week there are more important things than picking these games, so I'm just like, what the heck?
I'm going to say this. Every QB, and I believe that's six of them now, and there's some names that are not going to be in the Hall of Fame in that list. Maybe not even the Hall of Fame at their college on that list, have thrown for 300 yards against the New England Patriots. Every quarterback this year has thrown for over 300 yards.
Have they really?
Every single one.
So, I'm going to take Atlanta.
Give me a load of stairs. Give me none of that stare. And then, right, last one. Washington at Philadelphia. I'm going to go Philly at home. Home team.
I'm
home
anxious team to alert. See this. I hope we get a chance to watch this game because this is going to be a real good football game. And I am going to take the Philadelphia Eagles.
All right, that one will be on Sky Sports Monday Night Football on Sky Sports to wrap up week 7. So it will be a good one. We'll be out at Twickenham. And I think... this week of all weeks, Jeff, we always love to get out and see all the fans, but I think it'll be just tremendous to be around the fans and to have the football family come together. I did another radio interview and a podcast earlier today, and I sent out a thank you to everyone who's kind of reached out to me, to us, not just to send they're sending their tributes to Kev, of course, and there's some beautiful tributes on there, but they're checking if we're okay as well. And I think it's just going to be nice to be around the fans this weekend.
This is the best job in football. I mean, I love coaching to death. But I'm going to tell you something. To be at Wembley was maybe as big a thing. I mean, coach in front of 100,000, coaching, you know, against the Washington Redskins, all that stuff. But I'm going to tell you something. When I saw that stadium, and I watched the way the fans reacted, and you see the reaction of the coaches and the players who have no idea what they're getting into. I was talking about Baltimore fans. Yeah. They were shocked. They were shocked at the whole thing. Mm. Right? And it may be as good an environment as I've been around other than a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, because you got fans of all the teams there.
Yeah, yeah.
So I cannot wait to get out. I may not sleep that night. I may just pitch a tent outside.
Go all the way through.
Pitch a tent outside Twickenham.
Won't be the first time you've turned up for a football game, Jeff, not sleeping the night before. All right. We are out of time. Remember, hit us up on Twitter. Let us know what you think about opening title music. We appreciate all of your feedback. This one was for our very, very dear friend, Kevin Cadle, who will be sorely missed, never, ever forgotten. Say goodbye, Coach.
Big fella, do your thing. Aloha.